for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 321 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with Dave Cook, the creator and writer of Killtopia, which is a terrific book that is being supported by a successful campaign in Kickstarter. I'll read you quickly a brief description of it. In future Japan, a salvage hunter and his robot sidekick are hunted by insane android killers in a race to cure a deadly nanoplague. I talk with Dave about his recent successful Kickstarter, as well as other things in the book, including the characters, and what the future is for Killtopia. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome to the podcast Dave Cook, the creator of a very creative comic called Killtopia. And you're the president of the company that makes Killtopia, aren't you, Dave?
Yeah, so I'm the founder and lead author at Cardshark Comics. We are not a publisher, but we are a sort of creative collective here in Scotland. So I guess it's just a creative team. You know, I'm the writer, but I also bring in, you know, different letterers, artists, colorists. We are also looking at branching out into other titles as well. So potentially giving some new creators a shot, you know, who have never had a comic out. So it's early days yet, but yeah, we'll see where it goes.
No, as I was reading on Facebook, your first book came out in 2015.
That's correct. Yeah, it was a funny thing. So my background is in journalism. Mm-hmm. I sort of had the appetite to make a novel at first, but then I started to think, you know, I quite like comics. I'm more into the visual medium, so I sort of started writing a comic for fun, to be honest, as a, you know, 10-page short one shot with no real aspiration of doing a full comic or, you know, doing the comic convention circuit. But it just so happened that one of my friends was quite a big comic fan and sort of ran a small anthology. He cast his eye over it and just said, hey, you know, there's something in here. Maybe you should look to expand that. So thanks to that sort of support, yeah, we expanded it into a comic called Bust, which is a sort of post-apocalyptic road trip comic, but featuring a character who has onset dementia. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a prevalent thing these days, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot more, certainly here in Scotland and the UK, there's a lot more of a spotlight on, you know, dementia and the causes of it and dealing with it. So I think that sort of has come at a good time. Mm-hmm. Where it's quite topical, quite a serious subject, of course, but it definitely, it's just grown from there, really. I couldn't have seen it coming, but I'm very grateful for that early support.
I want to get into the book itself, but I want to talk first because you've got some big news. Unfortunately, because of my schedule, I didn't get to interview you before your Kickstarter got completed, so I'm sorry about that. But you had a big successful campaign. Why don't you tell people about it?
Yeah, thank you. And it was for our new comic, Killtopia. And this is actually our sixth comic Kickstarter to date. We've had five funded before. In fact, all of our comics have been funded by crowdfunding, which is I really like the platform. You know, in my sort of journalistic days, I predominantly worked in the video game sector, you know, covering everything from indie games to the high profile stuff. But I had actually interviewed a lot of developers who had branched away from the big developer model to go alone on Kickstarter. And just through speaking with them and I got a good feel for how to run a Kickstarter, what works, what doesn't, and I've seen both success and failures. Of course, it's never nice when one fails, but there's a lot of learnings to be had there. So I think that put us in good stead. But yeah, so we for Killtopia, we only needed £4,000 within 12 hours of launching the campaign. We had that and more. And ultimately we ended, I think it was 403% funded.
Wow.
£16,000. So, I mean, you know, thank you to anyone, you know, out there who backed it. I mean, it's crazy to think that we would even get that far. It's funny because the night before we launched, we actually had a conversation, Craig and I, just about what we would do if we didn't make the money. Mm. So, you know, it's funny how these things work out, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, what that's going to allow you to do is maybe do more than what you were originally planning to do. Has this expanded your plans for Kiltopia? Has this made it something that you can do more than maybe, say, just one issue?
Yeah, for sure. So I think we'll need to wait and see how much money actually comes through, because, of course, with Kickstarter, they take a cut, which is undecided. It basically depends on how many people back your comic from overseas. But we're confident we'll have enough to fund book two in its entirety. Of course, we'll still do a Kickstarter to sort of add as a pre-order method, you know, to reach those people who backed the first one. But it does mean now that we're kind of, I mean, thanks to everyone's amazing generosity, that we're a bit more self-sufficient now. It certainly has, we're starting, I mean, so issue two is almost written in its first draft, and we're going for a much bigger book now, because I think we can amass the budget to do that. So I think it's going to make us, you know, do more of a trade-like format, which is still to be confirmed, of course, but, you know, it certainly has expanded how big the books can be. And I think that's important when we can still only afford to put out one of these a year. Because, of course, we need to pay for print costs and also tour it around, you know, the convention circuit, which takes time and sort of money as well. But it does mean that we can give people a bigger book every year, so there's more to sort of get through, you know, so it's not just a few pages every year and then you have to wait another year. So
so how big of a book are you looking at right now?
So issue one, it's story wise it is 44 pages, but we are going to add a lot more bonus content now as well, and that will include the bonus prints we have, which were the stretch goals. So that's from really big talent, actually. So we had we've got Derek Robertson from Transmetropolitan and Happy making us a print. We've got Casper Winyard from Limbo and Angelic, Thomas Foster from 2000 AD who works on Judge Dredd, and Gary Erskine, a really great Scottish artist who has worked, I mean, he's worked for everyone from Marvel, DC, IDW, you name it. So we're really appreciative that we managed to get such big names behind us. So their art will be in the book as well. We'll also do a few script to page transition pieces, because we found that a lot of people really appreciated during the campaign that behind the scenes look at, you know, how these pages come about. And I, from what I understand, that isn't as common, I think, to the degree that we've done it, I think, because we posted up like the roughest of the rough things. You know, we're not afraid to show how sketchy some things can look at the start, you know, or how the script is in its first incarnation. It's not. You know, let's just say it's far removed from the final product, but I think that's the beauty of Kickstarter, is to let people in to that process so they can see how it's done, and to have, you know, you consider how much noise there is online now, how much stuff is out there, to have that direct channel to your fans, and to be that ability to be so transparent and involve the fans every step of the way, it's just such a wonderful thing. And we'll certainly use Kickstarter again for sure.
Oh yeah, well now you're good at it. Now you've got a big success behind you. That's going to make things easier the next time. You've already built a fan base, which is going to be really strong. Now there's another bit of news that I saw on Facebook that I thought we should talk about too. Is that you've scored a publishing deal? Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so it's a publisher here in Scotland called BHP Comics, and they're a really great bunch, because I think a lot, basically what they do is predominantly trades. So we're talking really nice, perfect bound books. They do a lot of sort of coffee table books about art. So Frank Quietly, for example, who's worked with so many big publishers and titles, they release a sort of coffee table book of all of his art. It's really lovely. They've put on exhibitions for it. And a lot of their books have sort of social political slants as well. So there's a great book called We Will Fight Until We Win, which is all about the suffragette movement here in the UK, you know, sort of feminist movement, which is great. There's a few books that work with sort of newcomers like student artists and whatnot. So it's kind of books for change. And I guess they were endeared to Kiltopia because there's a healthcare inequality angle. Not to get too political here, but the base concept of the comic was around, obviously, I mean, I don't know if everyone will know about the NHS here in the UK, which is free healthcare for for everyone, basically. And it's always at the mercy of politicians. Everyone's trying to shut it down and take funding away from it to set it up to fail and be privatized, basically. So Kiltopia, while it's a cyberpunk comic, kind of looks at this really brutal disease that's taken over future Japan and how people at different ends of the wealth scale deal with it. So I think that's what endeared them to us. But it really means that, I mean, we are the first book that they've published off of Kickstarter.
Yeah, how about that?
So it's kind of... Yeah, it's crazy, and I think it makes sense for both sides actually, because you know we've made the money to make the comic. There's no upfront cost for those guys, but they really do have a great network of they've got roots into comic shops. They've got a great relationship with the Comic Con circuit. They're going to help do so much for us that we couldn't do on our own. So I think we could only take it so far, so I think it's going to be a great partnership. And the book is going to launch at Comic Cons at Thought Bubble in Leeds, which is September 22nd and 23rd. Which will be the first Comic Con unveiling, and that's a great show as well. It's part of a book festival, and that attracts again the likes of Marvel, DC, Image. So it's the perfect place to launch, and we couldn't be happier getting involved with those guys. So we'll see where that goes as well.
Well, I know BHP because they had done an Alan Grant book, and the name escapes me, but it was about an alien who took the place of a tennis player. And even as an alien, he was a better human than this arrogant tennis player was.
Oh, yeah, that's Rock of the Reds.
Yes,
That's John Wagner from... the creator of Judge Dredd, of course. I think that's a great series. It's a sort of a tribute to the old. So if you were to pick up a newspaper here in the 80s or maybe as far back as the 70s, there was a lot of weekly comics, comic strips about soccer players.
That's what it was.
Loyal to the Rovers and that sort of thing, So I think it's a sort of tribute to that kind of thing, which is very nostalgic, but with the sort of the otherworldly sort of element to it, makes it fresh for new people as well. So it's a great little series, actually. And John's a lovely guy. I've met him a few times. It's if anyone's into their sports, they should check that one out as well.
Yeah, because I got to see the first issue, and then I couldn't, because I'm in the States, couldn't find the rest of the issues. And so I got a hold of the company, and I said, can I order them? So I ordered them. And they were kind enough to send the stuff to me after I paid for it, because I just thought it was this really fascinating concept. And that first issue really kind of grabbed me. So BHP has a lot of named people in their stall and great, great books that they've been doing. So you must have been thrilled when you got the news about that.
Yeah, for sure, and we've been kind of friends with some of the team as well, because they run Glasgow Comic Con. So Glasgow is just the next city over from where I am in Edinburgh. So we're in the capital. Glasgow's on the west coast, so it's a great. There's actually a lot of Comic Cons there throughout the year. So they run the Glasgow one in the summer. So we got to know those guys through that as well.
Cool.
So we kind of knew them and their company we trust. And I think it was just a good fit, the stars aligned, basically.
Well, I got a quote. It looks like it's Shah Nazir, and I probably butchered his name, who the head of BHP says about Kiltopia number one, Kiltopia captures the zeitgeist of readers having an appetite for genre-based sci-fi books and immediately caught our attention. So that's a good thing. When they get especially a comic publisher who probably gets lots and lots of submissions and lots of people interested in having their material publish them, to get their eye and get their attention, boy, that was a nice thing. That's a great thing. Did you submit to them? Did they come to you? How did that work?
They came to us. Yeah.
Wow. Because
I had, I think what helps, and this is a sort of something I say to a lot of people, especially young people who come to our Comic Con tables, is they ask me, they'll say things like, how do you make it in comics? And I always say, well, what do you mean by make it? And they're like, oh, I want to get my stuff seen. I want to get it, you know, I want to get in front of editors and into the hands of people who are going to enjoy it, you know. And I just say, you just have to put yourself out there. You know, you have to just do stuff and get over that sort of initial trepidation. Because I get it. You know, I was in their shoes as well. You know, you know, before 2015, when the first book came out, I was, you know, how do I do this? I don't think I can. You know, this sort of self-doubt. But when it came to BHP, I had actually pitched them before.
Oh, and been
politely rejected. So, and that's the point. You know, we were already kind of on their radar. They had rejected us before very politely. And to Shaz's credit, even though that our last series Vessels got turned down, he was very happy to spend time with us and explain to us some things that we could do from a professional point of view to pitch to other publishers, which was great. So I think that just goes to show, if you're on people's radar, just try and be everywhere you can, and someone will take notice, and or they will remember you next time. And it's difficult, especially when you have to be everywhere at once. You know, you have to always be pitching and being visible and promoting. But this just goes to show that it stuck with Sha and BHP, and they were happy to give us a shot. So, yeah, it's crazy.
I have to say, I loved Vessels. I wrote a big review of it on Major Spoilers, because I love the story so much.
Thank you.
And then I'm just fascinated, because you answered the question. I was wondering how they ever found your book, because if you didn't give it to them, I was just kind of interested as to how they might actually discover it. A convention? I was trying to figure how that happened, but apparently because you had a contact with them before, they were following what you were doing, and that's how they got a hold of it.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, some people have said in the past, multiple people have said in the past that when they look at what I do on social media, and I have to give a disclaimer at this point, I work in digital marketing.
Ah.
So this is kind of my 9-to-5, is to be tenacious online. And so that's what they say. A lot of people say about me, I'm quite tenacious when it comes to the promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure a lot of people are sick of seeing Kiltopia now. politely sick about it. But, you know, that's what you have to do, because if you're not trying to be as visible as possible, and you consider people's like short attention spans now online, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a constant battle for people's attention. So you have to at least try and put the name out, and definitely research. I mean, there's lots of books out there that will help you understand how to be visible, and just speak to other comic creators who have done it. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with Bob Sally from Salvagers.
Oh, yeah.
Bob has been a great help to me, a great inspiration. I view him still as the gold standard of indie self-promotion.
Wow.
Personally speaking, you know, I think he's great at what he does, and you know, we had a lot of chats, and he recommended a few marketing books to me that have just opened up my eyes to great. You know, my job aside, you know, because I do this kind of for a living as well, the marketing side. I just got a few great perspectives from some books that just help further that knowledge. It's difficult, but you know, as I always say online, my door is always open on Facebook and over the Kickstarter inbox. So if anyone listening has any question about how to do it, I'm more than happy to spend some time.
Very cool. It's interesting, because I've interviewed Bob several times on here. I like his book, Salvagers. I particularly like it, and he's also got the one with Bigfoot in it. I always forget the name of that one, but
Shelter Division.
Yeah, Shelter Division, which I really enjoy too. So I see him at cons all the time and stuff like that. It's funny you talk that way, because I help with an indie comic called Stabbity Bunny that is published by Scout Comics, and I've been working with the creator, and one of the things that he's been doing is a lot of what you're talking about: relationship building, interacting with people, getting to know people in the industry. And that's how it got picked up by Scout, was that we started the process with them. And it was, you know, it's turned into a great relationship. Things are really great about that. And Bob, it was one of the people who gave advice as to how to proceed and stuff like that. He went to Source Point Press, and one of the reasons we didn't was because they prefer trades. and we wanted to do individual issues, at least Richard Rivera, who did it. That's what he preferred. So that was why we didn't go Source Point Press, but we went Scout. But I'm glad to hear that because, you know, there's, I think one of the great things about the indie comics industry is the fact that there are people like you and like Bob and others who can help new creators, who can give advice and kind of avoid the pitfalls that so many people do. You blow a lot of money on something that doesn't work and you're out the money and you can't really get your book out there anymore. But it sounds like to you, what you've done is you have built on what other people have done, and you yourself as a professional know about social media. I wanted to mention real quickly that in the first issue of Stabity Bunny was coming out, Richard sent mail, he sent emails, he was mailing posters to people, he was doing everything he could to get the word out. And, you know, I it sounds like what you did with this book, it just got the word out and let people know what you were up to, and people got on board real quickly.
Yeah, it's interesting because since I am actually going to write a few guides on how I did what I did.
Oh, cool.
Because I just believe in sharing the wealth. Mm-hmm. I think we've all been there, you know, looked at an industry or looked at something that we wanted to get into, be it comics, you know, music, you know, whatever, the gig industry, for example, or the music industry, and just thought, how do I get from this level as an indie to the next level? How do I get there? And it's really hard. There's not a lot of guides online. I mean, Jim Zub, of course, writes a lot of great blogs around how sort of blows the lid off of how to pitch publishers and do all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's still a gap between being a brand newcomer to getting to that. And I'm keen to try and help people get, because I mean, my inbox is always filled with requests from people and questions. Mm-hmm. Like I say, I always encourage it. Mm-hmm. And just try to help people where I can. But one of the questions I get quite a lot is, you know, it's things like, I have a Kickstarter running right now. Mm-hmm. How do I get more backers? Mm-hmm. I want to know how you did it. And I always, I'm quite honest and helpful, but I have to be quite honest with them and say, we didn't just launch the Kickstarter, then flick on a switch, then all of a sudden we got lots of backers. I mean, this has kind of been the culmination of those six previous Kickstarters, and since we started in 2015, it's a culmination of all of that effort, and it's a long game. So I would say to anyone who is looking to maybe try Kickstarter for the first time, that if you do it and it fails, you can always just instantly restart it, tweak your pitch and then restart it, maybe second time lucky. If it does it and you get funded, you may get picked up by a small publisher straight away, but if you don't, it's not the end of the world, because it's all cumulative effort. It all builds up, and people, you'll just naturally over time, the more comic cons you go to, the more people you speak to, the more people like Bob that you talk to for advice, you know, they're going to remember you, and you just build up that sort of groundswell of support. And I think this is, for Kiltopia, this is just the point where it boiled over for us. I mean, and obviously it's not just marketing techniques. I think the product needs to speak to people as well. I think we're incredibly lucky that certainly the cyberpunk genre has just come back in a massive way. In the last, 6 months to a year, maybe not even that long, you know, Blade Runner's back, Altered Carbon. There's lots of comics out there that do this. Tokyo Ghost by Rick Remender is a great inspiration for us, but that really captured the sort of grimy feeling of cyberpunk. So I think it was just right place, right time. We had been marketing Kiltopia for over a year, and we had been, I mean, it's things like, for every Kickstarter we've done since 2015, we've built up a mailing list. So there's already, you know, say that mailing list is about 500 people's long, 500 names long, sorry. You can be guaranteed that a percentage of that will back every new product, project that you put on Kickstarter. So we know that we've got a foundation now. And the challenge is just to get new people involved. But it's not just something you can turn on one day and all of a sudden you get a fan base. And I think that's what sets some people apart. The people who really want it will chase it, and they will put in that long-term effort. I think it's that old quote about if you want to be an expert at something, it takes, I think, 100,000 hours or 10,000 hours, whatever. It's so true. There's no shortcut to being successful here. But I mean, I, like a lot of other comic creators that I know, you know, it gets tough though, you know, because you have to always, I mean, you've always got your phone going off with emails and alerts and things you need to do to promote yourself. And it can be quite a bit of a downer, you know, but, you know, lean on your friends, lean on your family for support. Take some time off if you need to, and come back with a vengeance, you know.
Because people look at Kickstarter every day. I call it the daily heart attack. You don't know whether something's going to happen that day or not. And if something doesn't happen that day, you're all, oh, no, it's going to fail, it's going to fail. But how many days did you do it? And I want to get to the book here pretty quick, but how many days did you actually do the Kickstarter before you went over the top?
Until we actually got funded.
Yeah.
12 hours.
Wow. See, lucky you. Boy, see, there's the result of good organization and getting ready for this. That's excellent.
It's crazy. It's funny because we actually had a comic con. The first comic con of this year was on the Saturday. The Kickstarter for Kiltopia went live on the Friday. And I thought, right, I'm gonna at the comic con, I'm gonna be pitching it hard. I'm gonna try and get names, and I'm gonna take mailing list emails. And then I woke up the next again morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, to get ready for this comic con, and we'd been funded. And I was just like, "What's happened? How has this happened?" You know. I mean, being very frank, I think we might seem quite cool and collected on Facebook, but Craig and I are just having a bit of an excited freak out about just what this means, and this is kind of foreign to us, right? This level of, you know, so. Again, thank you to anyone who backed us. It's crazy.
Yeah, nobody expects 12 hours when you get into a Kickstarter. You plan for the long haul, 30 days at least, or however many days you set it up for, and you hope on that last day you just go over the top, or you manage to do the bonus materials, you know, the extra levels and stuff like that, which is just great. Well, you know, congratulations to you on that, but let's get to talk about what this is all about, and that's the book Kiltopia itself. Why did you call it Kiltopia? What's that title got to do?
So, in the world of Kiltopia, like I said before, there is this nano disease which has infected most of the planet. Effectively, it's small microscopic robots inside your bloodstream that terraform your body from the inside and basically cause your entire body to collapse from within as fast as it can heal. So that sounds quite painful, right? But this disease has come from a big city in Japan. So this is kind of ground zero for this disease. And it comes from one day, you know, for spoiler reasons, I can't tell you why. an infestation of robots that are kind of animalistic. They're kind of like, they're kind of feral. They're not like, you know, they're not like androids or anything like that. They're kind of just like junky looking, but quite vicious, like robots. They just suddenly appear in this mega city and start terraforming a big district called Sector K. And the K, of course, is where kind of where Kiltopia came from. So they basically have terraformed this Sector K into a giant hostile jungle environment. So it's almost like an urban jungle. It's been evacuated. The robots have taken over. But they've just claimed this territory for their own. They don't actually leave. They don't spill out into the city. But they're basically causing this massive virus to spread across the planet. So naturally, you'd think people would want to go in there. The military would want to go in there and clean them up. But everyone sees a way to profit off of it, because if there's a disease, people can sell the cure, right? So the military, the governments, Yakuza gangs, every lowlife around basically hires bounty hunters to destroy these robots, extract their technology, and use them to make new weaponry for world wars and for profit, for personal gain and profit. So they've kind of made this microeconomy around this horrific disease, which is kind of like what, I guess, pharmaceutical companies do. So So Sector K, we thought we need a name that starts with a K because we want to do something with that. Of course, this is a cyberpunk dystopian novel. So Dystopia, Sector K, Dystopia, Kiltopia. That's where it came from.
All right. Very good. Very good. Now talk about the characters, because one of the things you said in a post about, you have a quick story intro. You talk about the main, looks like the story focuses on Shinji, a rookie wrecker with crap weaponry who hunts mechs to pay for his dying sister's medical care. And then he meets the world's first thinking, feeling, sentient mech, a robot called Crash. Talk about these folks. How did you guys come up with them? Are they like based on people you know? Are they something from your imagination? Talk about like who Shinji is and stuff like that.
So, yeah, I mean, primarily just from my imagination. However, his name is Shinji Kamiya. Mm-hmm. And I'll sort of explain that name. I'll sort of give you an idea of where the grand concept came from. So I'm a big fan of Japanese gaming, particularly the works of Shinji Mikami, who is the director of Resident Evil 4, Vanquish, a lot of really cool, like, over-the-top wild action games, you know. Mm-hmm. My other favorite Japanese developer is Hideki Kamiya, who is the director of Bayonetta, Nier Automata, which is actually a game about sentient robots. So there's a bit of a loop around there. Mm-hmm. So if you put their first name and last name together, you get Shinji Kamiya. So it's kind of a tribute to both of my favorite game developers. But the idea of this disease, and I think it sort of came out of the healthcare system was really big in the news at the time when I had the idea. So like I said before, the NHS here in the UK was getting dismantled. I think you got, you know, in the States there was of course that whole back and forth about healthcare inequality, insurance, that kind of thing. So it's something we can all relate to, right? So basically, I thought, okay, so what can we do with the healthcare angle? And then I'm a big Breaking Bad fan as well. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have a character who can't afford medical care, who goes to terrible lengths to either cure himself or someone that he knows. And it just so happened we fell on his sister, because we thought narratively to have him being sick all the time, to have Shinji be the guy that was sick might forces down some narrative paths, like, so he's always gonna have to find a cure, and his, you know, and we didn't want that sickness to dictate him too much. So he basically hunts robots in the Kiltopia zone, the Sector K zone, but without a permit. So you actually need to be a sanctioned sponsored wrecker to do it. So he's a bit of an underdog. He's so desperate. So basically him and his sister Omi lost their home and their parents in the big event that caused these robots to appear. So they've been living on the streets in, you know, passed around hostels and orphanages for years. They're basically street rats, you know, nobody wants to give them jobs, so they haven't got any insurance. So he builds his own technology with his street smarts and sort of information he's cobbled together online, makes his own technology and goes out into the jungle to hunt robots. And basically to sell the scrap for his sister's injections that he needs to keep on doing constantly to keep her alive. But then he meets Crash, who is the first ever sentient thinking robot to have ever been discovered in Kiltopia. And this is not a spoiler, because we established this is actually a core plot point. Crash has the ability to speak English and Japanese and any language. He's his primary function is translation. So he can actually translate between the scripts and the software running these robots and human language. And in the world of Kiltopia, no one has ever cracked the machine code, but he can translate between both of them. You know, therefore, he can tell the world how to cure this disease. Once word gets out about that on the bounty boards and the forums and on the news and stuff, every assassin and wrecker and bounty hunter and lowlife wants to claim him. So he's almost like a walking MacGuffin. And it just basically every like weird freak and every like augmented. So there's augmented samurai and mechanized kaiju and android assassins, just a cast of crazy colorful and brash characters all trying to kill Crash for the bounty. Meanwhile they're trying to figure out how to cure the world and deal with their own problems. So there's always that looming threat of when you turn a page, which of these assassins is going to crash through the roof and start a big fight, or you know. So we're keeping people on their toes. I think that element of the comic came from another one of my favorite films is Battle Royale. So that big battle, you know, sort of across one location kind of setting that I kind of like. So there's a lot of influences in there and there's a lot of things going on, but I think when people read the first script, the first issue, I think you'll I like to think we've juggled it quite well. There's a good pace and a rhythm to it all. So, yeah.
Wow.
A lot going on.
Yeah, well, I love a good action story. I really do. When I have a book that is too verbose, I struggle with it because I have to, sometimes I start skipping the words and then I miss some of the story, and I always hate that. So I like a good action-oriented story like that. I have a question about Shinji, because in the image that I see on him on Facebook, he's holding a baseball bat, and it's got a computer term on the baseball bat, EXE. Which, of course, is, if you know Windows, that's the program thing, that you'll have something .exe, and that'll make it that something happens. Why does he have EXE on his baseball bat?
That was actually something Craig came up with that wasn't actually in the original script. So I think it was just kind of a joke about home run .exe. So we just sort of stuck it on there. Mm-hmm. But the bat is also kind of symbolic in that him and his sister are big baseball fans. They used to like play as kids. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like his old bat from back in the day, kind of a memento kind of thing that he sort of weaponized and sort of strengthened. But you know, the bat might have a few little tricks up its sleeve as well. He may or may not have modded it somehow. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes.
Very cool. Now, you revealed another character on Facebook called Dr. Scratch.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about him?
Yeah, sure. So Craig's brother, Gary, actually lives in Japan. So he's actually been our cultural consultant on this, because we didn't want to offend anyone or get anything, no stereotypes in there. We wanted it to be as accurate to real Japanese culture and life as possible. Of course, through a sort of hyper-real lens of cyberpunk, you know. So it was down to things like, for example, in one scene there's a police car, and in the script I wrote, you know, the lights are flashing blue and red, and Gary said, well, if you want to be super accurate, Japanese police cars only have red lights. So you might want to think about that. Mm-hmm. And one thing he told us, we were coming up with these crazy personalities, and again, I'm a big hip hop fan. Mm-hmm. So I thought, yeah, I want to get a character in there who's about music and all of his weaponry and his persona, his wrecker, because all the wreckers have gimmicks, right? They're mm-hmm. like wrestlers. So I wanted his to be 80s hip hop, you know, drawing mm-hmm. from my own influences again. Mm-hmm. And Gary explained to us that, Craig has been to Japan as well. So apparently the old school 80s hip hop style, as in dress sense and sort of vibe and that kind of, I mean, rap is really big in Japan. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, from what I've been told from Craig and other sources, the 80s influence is sort of creeping in. The sort of, you know, if you go back to things like KPMD and Eric B and Rakim and stuff like that, like mm-hmm. that sort of influence is sort of coming through again now. So you do get guys with like, you know, over there, sort of dressing in the sort of hip hop style, and it's kind of cool to see that kind of coming back. I say coming back, but I guess it's kind of new in Japan, that kind of style. But mm-hmm. So yes, Dr. Scratch, it was a triple platinum record, rapper slash producer slash mm-hmm. superstar. You know, he was like, he conquered the music industry, then decided to mm-hmm. conquer the record circuit. Mm-hmm. So all of his weaponry is music based. So he's got a big Canon, which is just a set of DJ decks. Mm-hmm. He can scratch a vinyl to tee up a breakbeat or a massive like synth stab or something like that, mm-hmm. and then gets weaponized into a sonic blast that comes out of his cannon. So there's a lot of musical notes pounding across the screen as he's mm-hmm. ripping apart forests and blowing up buildings and stuff. He also has an axe on his back, which is it also doubles up as a mic stand. Mm-hmm. So he's like shouting into it while swinging it, and we've just gone crazy with the character design, right? So everyone's bigger than large than life. They've all mm-hmm. got tangible personas. It's just one of the most fun things I've ever written. He's one of my favorite characters as well.
Oh, cool. Now, of course, this leads right into the next thing. I noticed that as part of the campaign, you made an original soundtrack for Killtopia available. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, apparently you've got several artists involved. What kinds of music is on it? What's the soundtrack like?
Yeah, so what we're planning is to reveal the whole thing on Bandcamp later in the year. Okay. Certainly before the comic comes out as a sort of companion piece. Mm-hmm. One of Craig's friends is a hobbyist musician, mm-hmm. and her name's Suze Gibson. Mm-hmm. She really could be doing this for professional, like, I mean, it's amazing that she does it as a hobby, but mm-hmm. she's really good. That's the thing. It's crazy that you know, that we got her to help out with this. So what Suze has done so far is quite a lot of really sort of really cool atmospheric sort of synthy, nothing too in your face, just kind of atmospheric kind of music that fits sort of the I guess, like the sort of abandoned feel of Sector K. You know, there's no humans living there anymore. It's just robots now, and it's a big jungle. So kind of stirring kind of stuff like that. On the other side, we've also got a guy called Paul Devine, who is doing some more of the abrasive kind of stuff. So he did a great song, which was a tribute to the last day of Sector K before the robots appeared. And it sort of builds up and builds up and builds up, and then you actually hear like a big explosion and lots of screams, and then the music just drops dead. And it's just like this really powerful piece. It's on our Kickstarter and Facebook if people want to check it out. But so what I think what we're going to do is Suze has done a lot of sort of background music, so it's really good and atmospheric and draws you in. Now we're going to do some more of the up-tempo stuff, I think, which we'll reveal more of that as it comes out. But so I think it's going to be a mix of sort of chilled ambience that you can sort of read the book to, and some more thematic stuff around key scenes and whatnot. So it's an interesting one. We just sort of thought, what could we do a bit different? And I haven't seen many comic soundtracks, to be honest. So we thought, hey, let's just try it, you know?
Some people, what they'll do is they'll put a list of songs to listen to. They don't actually provide the soundtrack. You have to go track the music down. But to actually give make the CD available with the music in it, I think that's quite a nice accomplishment. That's amazing.
Yeah, we also have, it's funny, so we actually did make a Spotify playlist of music that, so obviously, you know, artists will have a visual mood board. So, you know, imagery then sets a tone. We listened to a lot of music that captured our kind of vibe for what we saw the comic being while we wrote and drew it, respectively. So Craig and I made some mixtapes on Spotify, which you can find if you just search Kiltopia. Of music we listen to just to get ourselves in the right mindset for writing and conceptualizing. And we also made a mixtape for Dr. Scratch. So we made a playlist that he would listen to while hunting robots. So again, that's full of like 80s hip hop, you know, old school Beastie Boys, stuff like that. So we're just trying to give the world more of a tangible feel than beyond the page. So you can hear it, you can see it in the imagery, you can read about it. And it's just trying to make a sort of universe, you know, make it feel a bit more tangible. So we're just trying everything we can, see what happens. So it seems to be working out so far.
It's very creative. I really like the way that you guys are doing this and approaching this and making this thing something that people can dive into and feel a part of, which I think is really cool. Now, I've got to ask, of course, I'm not one of the fortunate people who got to participate in the Kickstarter. You know, those lucky people will get these things that we've been talking about, you know, the book, the CD of music and stuff like that, if they, you know, depending on what they contributed. But for somebody who did not participate in the Kickstarter, how is that person going to be able to get a hold of Kiltopia?
So through BHP, we'll be selling copies online. Of course, that'll just be mail order. So near or far, international, wherever you are, you'll be able to order the comic that way. We're also going to be, you know, going into distribution. So hopefully we'll get into a lot of comic shops. We're lucky enough that we'll be able to get in some book chains as well. I'm not sure exactly what those are, but I mean, you'll also get the digital option as well if you prefer. We're still to finalize plans on exactly what, you know, apps and what stores we're going to target. That's kind of a discussion we need to have with the publisher, but we're setting our sights high, so we're hoping that it won't be too hard to track down. We're hoping that whatever's convenient for you, you'll be able to get it. But we're hoping that certainly the Comic Con launches the 22nd, 23rd of September. The very next day, the 24th, which is a Monday, we're hoping to go on like general sale. And then Kickstarter backers, because we're making, we obviously have to make all the rewards and all that extra stuff. We're going to be shipping to backers a little bit later after that launch, hopefully just another week. So start of October, we're hoping to start shipping out. But just a caveat, of course, we have about 900 backers, so they'll be going out in phases, because I don't want to wish that upon my post office. My poor post office staff don't like me very much, I don't think, because every time we do a Kickstarter, it's you know, I think they run screaming at the sight of me walking over the horizon with about 600 comics to ship out.
Well, yeah, but they might, for not, sure. They might, but not the rest of the people who have supported you in the Kickstarter. They're anxious to get those good things.
Oh, totally.
So if you're like me from the States, the website's the best way to go?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the website that I know of so far will be the best way. I guess it depends on if we get into, you know, brick and mortar stores in, right. in America, for example, right. and beyond. You know, mm-hmm. I guess we're yet to have those discussions. But I would say to anyone who wants to know, keep an eye on the Killtopia Facebook and CardSharkComics.com and BHP.com and just all the places we're at, and we'll make sure everyone, you know, is kind of loud and clear. Because we don't want anyone to miss out. So, no. For sure.
No, it looks like great fun. That's what I'm going to have to do. As soon as it becomes available, I'm going to order it. Because it really looks good. It's very fascinating. The artwork looks really clear and understandable and very action-oriented. As well as the story really grabs me. I think it's just a great story that you've come
thank
up
you.
With. It's just wonderful stuff.
Thank
so,
you.
Okay, so October is when the Kickstarters will go out. It's also going to, just to make sure, is it right around that time that we'll also be able to order it through the website?
I guess, yeah. So I think we're looking at September 24th for the website.
Okay.
But that could come forward. I mean, it just depends, I suppose, on the publisher. But right now we're targeting, September 24th.
Okay.
And of course, the Kickstarter copies may be earlier as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, you know, we've got all the t-shirts to make and all the extra bonuses to make. So that will certainly take time. But we're targeting October, but it may be sooner. So I think if there's any backers listening, just keep an eye on your inbox, and we'll keep you guys well informed.
It's a good kind of busy for comedy.
Yeah, definitely is.
great fun. Well, you know, Killtopia obviously is off to a great start. Are there other projects you're working on we should be aware of?
Yeah, for sure. So Vessels 3 is in production now. I've seen storyboard layouts for the first few pages of that. So the whole team's back again. So we've got Rafael Descotado Jr. on artwork again. We've got Dennis Lehman from Germany on colors, and his colors are just looking so sharp at the moment on everything I've seen him do. So we're really glad to have him back. And on letters, we've got Micah Myers again as well. So it's a crazy issue, is all I'll say. It's very trippy. It's going to get weirder from here. But that will hit Kickstarter in August. So we're quite careful not to do Kickstarters too soon, because I guess it sets a bad precedent that, you know, hey, your last book that we funded for you hasn't come out yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we think August is just about the right. So we don't want to leave it too late in the year, because obviously people are thinking about Christmas, and that's just not a good sort of decision to do around about then. So we're thinking August is a good time. So that's what we're targeting just now. But the first art reveal for that is very soon. So definitely keep an eye on our Facebook for that. And I guess to sort of say as well, that we are about to give away the first two issues of Vessels digitally for free on the Killtopia Facebook.
Mm.
So, and that will be free via that Facebook for, you know, indefinitely. Because we realize we're just going to try and introduce our Killtopia fan base to Vessels and try and get more people involved in it. So that's a little treat from us for everyone, just for saying thank you for sticking with us all this time. And we're hoping to get a new fan base sort of built up there. So, yeah. Keep an eye out for that.
I loved that first issue. I really did. I got to see the second. I didn't get to write a review of it, but I really loved the second one too. So I think anybody who's listening and that becomes available, I would highly recommend you download those and give those a read, because they're going to be great fun. So I have to say, that's just fantastic stuff. Have you thought about going to the States to do any conventions and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm really keen to get to New York Comic Con.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually speaking with Bob Sally about logistically how to do that, and Bob actually gets his stuff printed. Apparently there's a print shop like right next door, so he gets things ordered by that shop, and then they just deliver it to the convention center, so it's ready for him.
Cool.
Which is genius. Which I wouldn't have thought, you know. So yeah, I definitely want to do that. For Vessels, I suppose Raphael lives near San Diego, so we're thinking maybe. I mean, that's like the holy grail, though, isn't it? That one. So we could try and get a table at that one. But for me, being over in Scotland, it really is a question of logistics and sort of cost as well. But I'm really thinking now, off the back of Killtopia and with a publisher behind us, I think we can get out there a lot more, I think. And that would just be the dream to do that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, Dave, you do wonderful things. I have to say, your books are always great fun to read, always very engaging, great characters, great art, nicely paced stories, just really well done. So I hope you keep it up for a long time. You and Kickstarter make a winning team, I think.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. And I think Craig and I aren't too good with feedback, but we're getting better. So good feedback. I mean, you know, praise. You know, we get kind of nervous about it, but it really does warm our hearts when we hear things like that, because it makes it just more worthwhile doing. You know, we will keep on doing it as long as people read it and enjoy it. So that's amazing to hear. Thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.